JD, here we are, still perplexed for another episode of Shorties with Morty.
Yeah, drop us a line. Let us know if you like the new format. And if you don't, we'll just be better about time management. We can make them longer.
Yeah, we get too into our own explorations, you know, when we start talking, and then all of a sudden we're 30 or 40 minutes in. So this week I wanted to continue around this discussion of meaninglessness. You know, last time we talked about how our thoughts do not mean anything. One thing that comes across in the Course in Miracles is that everything we see, like, that nothing has inherent meaning. And the reason why, you know, this lesson 12 and lesson 13 is that, well, it says the reason why we're upset is because we see a meaningless world, but really it's because we're ascribing our own meaning to what we think is inherently is maybe meaningless. There's something that this brought to mind that I wanted to try out on you. You know how, like, when you wake up, you have this dream, and the dream is all of a sudden, like, you were on vacation in the ocean and you were swimming. And then all of a sudden, and this is going on for a week, and you're having this great vacation in your dream, right? And all of a sudden you hear this, like, blaring horn from a boat. And then you wake up and you realize, oh, that's my alarm clock. So within kind of like a split second, your brain created this whole narrative to explain, like, what this alarm clock is. In your dream, it feels like it could be going back weeks or months, right, to get you to that moment of that blaring horn, right, which is actually just an alarm clock, right? Like, what's the meaning of an alarm? It's like, no, there's no meaning to it. Like, what's more meaningless than an alarm clock other than it's time to wake up? But that's what our brains do, right? Our brains, like, look at something and then create an entire narrative that creates context, literally creates, right? Like, just an imagined context for what you see in front of you. And I wonder if, like, if that's what our brains do when we're sleeping, perhaps that's also what they do when we are awake. Someone says something to us, something at work, for example. It's like, oh, you know, like, you really could have done a better job in that negotiation. And all of a sudden, like, where does your brain go? It goes all the way back to the past, right? To, like, all the times, starting from, you know, when you were in grade school or high school and how you didn't do that. It's like, oh yeah, they're right. It creates this whole narrative to create context for this statement when really, like, maybe there's no inherent meaning in it at all. I don't know. What do you think about that idea of, like, our brains as kind of meaning and context creating when sometimes, like, there really is none inherently?
So much of the work our brains are doing is kind of backfilling and trying to make sense of what it is we're thinking, feeling, etc. This past week, I've been sleeping very well. The week before, I was not. It's interesting how, okay, maybe the first day or two, you know, I notice I'm tired and things are a little different. By the third or fourth day, so many things feel like shitty. Whatever it is, things that I otherwise have been looking forward to, people I otherwise wanted to talk to, hobbies I otherwise enjoy doing. What's my brain doing? My brain isn't going, oh, JD, you're just tired. So everything you're seeing with these whatever tired colored glasses, my brain's making up stories about maybe you don't really like cooking. Maybe this person really isn't so much fun to talk to. Maybe you really need to do something else for work because you don't enjoy it anymore. And it's right. Like,
you're depressed.
Right. I'm not, maybe the therapy isn't working. Maybe I haven't been doing the right things. I need to work out more. I need to work out less. I'm not eating enough. I'm not drinking, like, all this stuff. And it's just like, oh, I've just been sleep deprived. And that compounds over the course of a few days. And it's amazing how, like, 2-3 days into sleeping well, all of a sudden those very same things are like, oh, wow, I really do love cooking. Yeah, this is so great. I have a night to myself. This is awesome. Oh, this friend from Austin called. Cannot wait to talk to him or her, whatever. Like, in her words, I see a meaningless world. We're just weaving. We're doing improv all the time is what we're doing.
We don't like it when it feels bad, right? So you're giving an example of
that's bad,
but we do the same thing where it's good. Where all of a sudden, like, we interpret when you got a better night's sleep and all of a sudden you enjoyed cooking and cooking was good and the friends were good. It's like, well, is that true that they're, all those things are good, right? Because now you just see that because all it would take is one bad night's sleep and they would be bad again. So are those things good or bad? It's like, well, no, they're not really inherently good or bad. As far as the context creation, I was at a hotel recently and I was thinking that, there was a section where they added on units. They, like, built new units. I was thinking about what you have to do when you run a hotel. And the truth is, like, every, I don't know how often, maybe it's 15 years, you have to like totally redo all of the rooms because like the style, you know, this what worked and the styles that made sense. Some of the functionality, like let's say the chargers that you have, you know, next to the beds. Remember, like used to have the internet hookups at the desks where you could put in your Wi-Fi cord, you know, to connect. Like those are no longer necessary.
TVs, iPod docking station, or iPhone dock, or whatever. Funny, yeah.
Yeah, so there. So every now and again, you have to look and say, like, is this design still serving the purpose that we want it to? And some things you're going to say, like, no, that iPod docking station, iPods aren't made anymore with that port. It doesn't make sense. It occurred to me that maybe the way we look at the world also is with glasses that we should. We need to reevaluate from time to time. There are glasses that we've used like our entire life. You know, we think, I don't know, some of the things that we even think are good, like we're offended by people's behavior, you know, on an airplane. Like we're just like, we get upset because we learned that there's a right way to act and a wrong way to act, right? And so like we get personally upset, like when we see something. Mm. Maybe that's a bad example, but just one that comes to mind. Are those glasses still serving us? Is that context still helpful for us? Or does it make sense to discard those glasses intentionally, realize that the reason why we're seeing that context is because of, you know, an old outdated pair of glasses, and now look at it differently, right? And now when we see someone being rude, maybe we say, instead of being offended by it, we think, wow, like I wonder what's going on in that person's life that would cause them to be rude. It must be something else. Maybe it's not the best example, but what do you think about that?
Well, to your point about kind of the both sides of it, that on the one hand, the things that are bad, it seems somehow obvious to us sometimes that, oh, that's just because I was tired or grumpy, as opposed to the things that feel good or fun. It's like, oh, that's just because you're well rested and you didn't, you know, enjoy anything. And I said, you know, we're kind of, it is sort of improv, or making this stuff up on the spot. It does remind me of another sort of rule of improv, which is really like, after the scene's done, it's done. I mean, okay, sure, if you're learning, if you're a student, maybe your teacher will, you know, give you some crit when you perform. There's no improv performers that you don't like go back over and like play with the threats. Like, it was fun. And some of the scenes are better and some of the scenes are worse. Some of them gel and people are doing things and it's great. Some of them drag and people aren't listening and the audience is looking confused. And it always ends and there's always something else. And there's always a break between it too. And in a way of remembering that in our experience as well, of like, oh, this is really fun. That's great. So nice that I enjoyed it. And no need to like cling to that either, or assume that that's like, oh, that's the real thing, or that's the identity of whatever, of the friend, the practice, the whatever. It's okay. That was great. How nice. How lovely that worked well. And when it doesn't go well, ooh, that was uncomfortable. I was scared. I was nervous. I didn't communicate, or I felt like I wasn't being heard. I did not enjoy that. Okay. Well, that's good. No, you know, noted, received, and you're somewhere else already by the time that thought has been processed. And there's sort of, you know, that kind of dynamic model maybe of life, and dynamic insofar as the changing and also not holding on to, not pushing away the bad or overly like clinging to or pulling towards oneself the good too. Feels like one of the lessons, I think, in this, the world being meaningless, right? Because she doesn't say that the world is like double chin, it was like fundamentally good. The world is meaningless in itself. We talk about good weather. Like, what does that mean? There's no such thing as good weather. There's weather.
Yeah, for a tree, is there good weather and bad weather, right? Remember, you know, when you, as a kid, you look at the rings when a tree is cut down. And you'll see it's very dark in one area and say, oh yeah, that's where there was a fire, right? And then it was, okay, so there was a fire, right? Does that mean that that was bad? Like, did that impact the rest? You know, say, okay, therefore I'm not going to grow the next year. And sometimes there's storms and the tree falls and that's the end of that tree, but then it gives nourishment and it can, you know, and feeds the rest of the forest.
Decomposes and turns into something else,
I mean, this is something that it also brought to mind, you know, Ecclesiastes, Kohelet, right? Which starts with saying, hevel, hevel, and hakol, hevel, that everything is meaningless. Sounds depressing, and it feels depressing, but it is kind of true, you know? And recently I've been having this reaction, I'll see, you know, on LinkedIn or whatever, like just a big announcement of like someone, I don't know, they bought $800 million of apartments, or they closed, you know, $200 million deal. Mm-hmm. And in the past, it'd be like, wow, that's amazing. It's like, imagine what that would be like to buy $1 billion apartments. Right? And more recently, when I see that, my reaction is like, so what? That doesn't go with you when you die, right? The person, no matter what, we're all going to die. And we're all going to lose loved ones. And then we die. And people will mourn for us, hopefully. Right? But it's like how long does it take before no one remembers you ever existed? Not that long. Maybe with the internet, it'll be a little longer. You know, but it's 100 years, 150 years, like it's nothing. Like it really is meaningless. And we just create these dramas to ascribe meaning. In lesson 13, she says that the recognition of meaninglessness arouses intense anxiety in all the separated ones. It represents a situation in which God and the ego challenge each other as to whose meaning is to be written in the empty space that meaninglessness provides. Right? That we get anxious because if it's meaningless, then what am I doing here? Like, you were saying before, like when there's a health crisis that you know what to do. When there's no crisis and you're just spending time together, it's like, well, what is this?
Yeah.
But I think maybe what that means is that you can just, there's no meaning other than just being where you are and being present in that. It doesn't have to be about getting to a goal or some imagined future. It's like, what would it be like to live in the moment, like without meaning? To me, it's like a scary off-putting thought because I like goals and I like pushing myself and I like thinking that I'm not doing enough. Yeah. But I don't know. I think this is like a really profound idea.
Yeah. And I totally identify with the anxiety or the fear, sometimes confronting that notion that like, oh, right. It doesn't mean nothing means anything in a certain way. Like if we think of anything that, and I so often certainly hear and use terms good and bad, right? This is good. This is good for that. Oh, that's bad. I don't want, I do want. What does that even mean? I've been reading this. I just finished this book on effective altruism by Will MacAskill, which I recommend anyone who's interested in exploring the ways that volunteerism as well as charitable giving have impacts and systems impacts. And I think it's really interesting. You know, his goal in writing the book, and he has a website and a research institute that's supposed to really help, again, effective altruism, help you give to charities that are really serving particular ends. And it's interesting in kind of reading through his book and looking at the way these things are ranked that, you know, we think like, okay, so there are certain charities that save, let's say, and prolong human lives. On the other hand, though, by saving and prolonging more lives, we create further issues of overpopulation, which is devastating to the climate. And it's this recognizing the kind of inherent, like, okay, if we really took a climate focus, then honestly, the more humans that die, like in theory, the better, right? Like why stop a pandemic? It's, you know, call the herd. And it's a perspective thing. Is it good for the mosquitoes that we use DEET? No. But is it good for us to be bitten by a mosquito carrying West Nile virus? Probably not. I wouldn't want that, or I don't think that would be fun for me. But if a mosquito carrying West Nile virus bit, let's say, Putin and killed him and ended the war for Ukraine, that would be good for a lot of people and maybe bad for other people. Like, and just kind of obvious as you really adopt all these perspectives and unravel, like the really like the constructs and concepts of good and bad, like really just deteriorate and are eroded at every level of inquiry, which again, sometimes is a little scary. Even as I say it now, it's like fun to talk and joke, but then to really sit with and be like, so then what, you know? Okay. We have our lesson say it's all meaningless. The meaningless world engenders fear. I'm afraid. Where do we go from here? And that, by the way, trying this out, that's sort of a teaser for next week. Our next shorty or longy for lesson 14, because our author says in the next lesson, God did not create a meaningless world. So just when you thought nothing meant anything, you guys will have to tune in next week to see what that statement might mean.
That's right. And be gentle with it, right? Like with these exercises that they say, it's like, yeah, just do it like for a minute at a time, 3 or 4 times a day. Don't get too caught up in it. You know, so just try out the idea and have faith that God did not create a meaningless world.
Yeah. Good luck. Have fun chewing and stewing on that.
All right. Have fun. Yeah. All right. Until next time, JD.
Yes. Until next week. Thank you, Morty. See ya. Bye, everybody.